is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, is it foreign or media interference in election 2020 that we should be concerned with? That is a question we'll answer today for you on Viewpoint. Many say the media is protecting Joe Biden. We'll talk about that in more detail with Michael Johns a bit later in the program here. We're seeing the escalation of crime still, and the war on cops continues. And we'll look at some real numbers there, an inconvenient truth, you could say, with Dr. Ron Martinelli. But we'll start right at the top here with the coronavirus relief deal. You see that the Democrat leaders and White House officials, specifically Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, been going back and forth to try to get this coronavirus relief package through the system. Let's bring on Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He's Chair of Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. There's a series of press and news items, Senator Johnson, starting with this one here, the coronavirus relief deal. Now, there's still, as I understand it, and maybe you can clarify this for me, but I think there's still over, like, I don't know, north of $1 trillion, I think, that is still from the first package that has not been spent. Is that correct?
Yeah, I held an oversight hearing 2 weeks ago, and all the witnesses were pretty much in agreement that it's probably about at least $1.2 trillion of the initial four packages that hasn't either been spent or even obligated. Mm-hmm. And so I've been very consistently saying is we ought to first take a look at what we've already spent, what worked, what didn't. You know, we knew when we passed this, it was going to be, you know, we had to do it quick, we had to do it massively, and we knew it was going to be far from perfect. So let's acknowledge that. Let's fix, you know, what we've already done. And certainly we should redirect and repurpose the $1.2 trillion before we even consider authorizing even a penny of new spending and quite honestly, new debt on the backs of our kids and grandkids. So, you know, from my standpoint, I'm glad these talks have not succeeded in further mortgaging our kids' future. And, you know, the good news of what President Trump will be doing is he's going to have to repurpose what's already been appropriated.
Now, can he do that?
Well, apparently, I was on a White House call and they're looking at the, you know, legal authority to do this. They believe they can. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether Democrats will go along with that or not. I mean, they've been instructing us every step of the way. I offered a unanimous consent request to continue plussing up state unemployment benefits by $200 a week, which, by the way, Malcolm, that's eight times more than what Democrats plussed up state unemployment benefits after the Great Recession when they held the presidency, a filibuster-proof Senate, and the House. They plussed them up by $25 a week. I'd offered $200. They said no to that. Martha McSally actually said, well, let's continue with the $600 till we get a deal. They even said no to that. So Democrats are being obstructionists, and they're the ones that could care less about how much our children's future is being mortgaged. They just don't care, apparently, that we're $26.5 trillion in debt, that we've already authorized, by the way, at least 13.5% of GDP. That's what $2.9 trillion is. Now, we just got the labor report. Employment is down 8%. The unemployment rate is 10%, but employment is down 8%. Mm-hmm. Recent economic forecasts say that our economy will be down somewhere between 4.6 and 8%. So employment's down 8%. The economy is going to shrink no more than 8%. We've already allocated 13.5%. And Nancy Pelosi wants to double that to close to 30%. It makes no sense whatsoever. Economically,
well, it's surprising to see really the resilience of the American people and how quickly a lot of these numbers are rebounding. Considering Senator Johnson, we had a complete lockdown and everything was, you know, locked up tight here. There are four orders here I want to touch on here that the president to give relief again to Americans, cut taxes for workers, extend the unemployment benefits through the end of the year, renew that moratorium on evictions. That's a big one there, and defer student loan payments and interest. Now, with all of this, many experts are saying he would face legal challenges potentially. But again, with those dollars left there, that's the question. Can they be utilized for this? The president said one final thing on this, Senator Johnson. He said, tragically, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer continue to insist on radical left-wing policies that have nothing to do with the China virus, nothing to do with it at all, which is really what you're saying there. But you got to remember, this is an election year, and they don't want to see the economy pick up, obviously. That seems to be the trend here. How do they maneuver through this? What happens?
We'll see how this all plays out, whether Democrats are actually challenge them or anybody will challenge them in the courts. Again, that's going to be a tough thing to do when you're just trying to provide financial relief to Americans that are suffering from this. So I mean, the president has the right intentions here. And, Malcolm, I've got to point out, real disposable income has increased from $14.9 trillion in March to $16 trillion in June. The savings rate is up from 8.3% in February to over 19% in June. Credit card debt's actually being paid down.
Wow.
So the American economy doesn't need more debt, undertaken by the federal government and plugged into an economy. This is now kind of a standard type of recovery. We need to get people off the sidelines. We need to incentivize them to get back into the workforce.
Yeah.
Because the biggest complaint I have from employees right now trying to open up their operations and rebuild the economy, repower it, is they can't find the workers. When you're making more unemployment, which is the current situation, people are reluctant to come back in the workforce and have to work and actually be paid less.
And, you're one of the very few I've heard reference the debt, and you're so right to say that, Senator Johnson, and I've been reporting on that. Nobody is talking about, the mortgaging of our future. This is a big deal because I'll tell you, in short order, once they get done with this whole coronavirus thing, I believe that debt will be north of $30 trillion, and we're taking on some massive debt here in this country. That will be the next pandemic, is that debt that'll really cripple this nation. You agree with that?
Yes, right now the Federal Reserve is having to buy up an awful lot of that debt we're issuing because the markets aren't. The Federal Reserve can only do that so long before we really spark inflation, and we're not going to loan you money, certainly not at that interest rate. If we just return to the 30-year average interest rates from a few years ago, that would be in excess of $1 trillion per year just in interest expense. That's more than we spend on discretionary spending a year. People have to understand the magnitude of the problem and the risk we are running. This isn't monopoly money.
Well, that's just it, but they're not understanding, Senator Johnson. They're not understanding exactly what you say. They need to understand the risk, but the media doesn't report this. So there really is virtually no news about what you're talking about right now. None.
No, the media is totally in the bag for Joe Biden and Democrats. And that's what Democrats always rely on.
Right.
And of course, that's a holdover from or a result of the radical left taking over our university systems in control of the culture in many respects, colleges of journalism, of education.
Yeah.
We're starting to see the effects right now, big time.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. It's been a trickling effect over many years, as you're exactly right. Listen, I want to talk to you about foreign interference in elections and something you had said in a tweet I want to get to in a moment here. But interesting report, Senator Johnson from NBC News, says that China wants Trump defeated. Russia is sabotaging Biden. These are, again, about foreign preferences in the upcoming election. So the Kremlin-linked operatives are trying to boost their say in President Donald Trump's candidacy. While China wants to see him defeated, this official said, "We assess that Russia is using a range of measures to primarily denigrate former Vice President Biden and what it sees as an anti-Russian establishment." Now, you had a meeting with somebody just recently, I believe. Ivanina, is it? I believe is the name.
Well, he's the head of the NCSC.
Right.
As part of our intelligence community, correct? He's been briefing, or his members of his staff, the FBI, have been briefing members of Congress. Malcolm, what I can tell you, there is very little of anything new in these reports.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually held a hearing in my Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee back, I think, 2014, 2015, about Russian interference in the politics of Eastern European nations. This is what they do. This is their method of operation. There's really not much new. They're new tools. They may be getting better at it. But they've been doing this for as long as they've existed, and they'll do it as long as they do exist. And other actors are trying to do this. It's important that we're aware of this, that the public's aware of it. Take things that you read on blogs and social media sites with a grain of salt. Verify pieces of information. Don't believe everything you read. But I personally don't think this is a huge threat to our democracy. We're aware of it. And by being aware of it, that's our, that's really our best line of defense. Certainly being blown way out of proportion by the left.
Exactly.
Because they don't want to hear, for example, what our investigation might turn up against what the FBI did, what you know, some of the Obama administration players did, and what Vice President Biden and his son did in Ukraine. They want to try and marginalize any results, any of the findings of our committee by, you know, really pushing this in the press, and they're pushing it hard, and they're pushing their, they are engaged in their own disinformation campaign right now. It's pretty despicable.
Yeah, all of this creates fear. That's what I think you're suggesting here. It really is a fair campaign, and there's a lot of people out there who believe that, or they've bitten that narrative that Russia is indeed trying to do something here. But your point that this has always been going on, it really is business as usual. I think when you look beyond the surface here, you're exactly right. These things have been going on for decades. It's not a new event that Russia and China are doing that. Now, China is coming out, and reports are they clearly don't want to President Trump, but that wouldn't be a surprise to you, would it, since President Trump has been so hard on China?
No, and China uses its enormous influence all over the world, and unfortunately, not in a benign way, in a very malign way, and I think that's what everybody globally is waking up to, is that unfortunately, China hasn't chosen the path of just a benign international competitor. Instead, they've really become a malign adversary, and we need to wake up to that fact. You know, we all hope that when we allow them into the World Trading Organization, as they pulled people out of poverty, which is a good thing, as they built their economy, that the democracy would prevail, and they would just, again, they would be a welcome nation in the global system. But they want to become the world's hegemon. They want to control things. And we certainly see how they control, for example, the people in Hong Kong and how they crush their freedoms. So we need to take China's threat very, very seriously. And of course, that's exactly what President Trump has done before he was president. And there's a reason that China would like Joe Biden, because he's pretty soft on China.
Right. And we've been reporting on this, what you say about China, a great deal here on the network, because it is a major threat, and people are starting to see, it's out in the middle of the daylight now, what China is up to. And it's all over the world. I mean, the repercussions of this are massive. And the timing shouldn't be lost on anybody, Senator Johnson, when you compare that to the pandemic and everything happening. Seems like they're trying to take advantage of things in a big, big way. While we're talking about the election, big controversy on this mail-in voting, universal voting, if you will, versus absentee voting. And there's a lot of confusion on this, which, listen, I've been doing my darndest to try to clean up and tell people what there is a major difference between the two. If you're requesting a ballot and you're in a state which allows that. And by the way, there are, I think, about 33 states or so that have no excuse absentee voting. So it's majorly accepted out there where you can get an absentee ballot in most states and do it. Others require some sort of an excuse, but that seems to be changing as people in these states want to make it accessible. But we're talking like states like Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, Utah, and now California are allowing this vote by mail. The president's been very outspoken about this. People are very concerned about election fraud. What's your take on this?
Well, let's just say, look, North Carolina, where they had to overturn a congressional race because of ballot harvesting, because it's illegal in North Carolina, and, you know, was abused in that election to the point where it overturned the election. But ballot harvesting is perfectly legal in California. And I think people suspect that the Republicans lost a few congressional seats due to ballot harvesting. So I think it's, from my standpoint, it just makes sense that you do a massive mail-in election, you lose control over it, and it's going to be ripe and certainly at risk for potentially massive fraud. I just finished reading an article on the congressional elections up in New York. They still haven't declared a winner.
Right.
And this is weeks after the election, because you get too many mail-in ballots. Mm-hmm. People wait to the last minute. They're not following the rules. There aren't proper controls. They're not mailing them in soon enough. They don't get postmarked. I mean, it is a major mess. And the concern is, particularly with COVID now, if everybody converts in states that aren't used to the kind of volume, this could be a massive problem. And we may not know the results of the election for weeks.
Could be weeks.
And in the current situation, that is not a good thing. So states and local jurisdictions have to get their act together. I think they have to put in controls. I think people have to be required to mail in their ballots probably earlier than normal. but this could potentially be a mess, a huge mess. And it's amazing to me that the mainstream media keeps criticizing President Trump because he's just pointing out what I think is obvious.
Which is what he does all the time. He points out what's obvious, but the establishment doesn't like that, what's obvious, obviously. You know, let's hope and pray, Senator Johnson, this is not a repeat of Bush versus Gore, as you say, historically, where things go on and you get the courts involved and everything else. It seems like we're set up for some nasty politics ahead here with this whole election fraud. The president, again, has been trying to advise people, but that is the case. Listen, on this whole election thing, there's a big thing happening with the president, the campaign, Trump campaign, being challenged from social media. You see Facebook removed a video. People are calling it he's being censored. This was a kind of a Fox News interview, I guess he said. And it was all about his comments about children are almost immune to COVID-19, he said. Well, Facebook and Twitter, by the way, both removed posts and said, you know, that's not true. So these organizations, and Facebook, in fact, is doing what they said they wouldn't do, and they're certainly becoming the arbiter of news now. They're playing publisher. I think that changes the entire rules, but they're not backing down, are they?
No, Malcolm, I mean, I think you realize, as an individual, we have laws in place where you can't own a newspaper, radio station, TV station in the same jurisdiction because That's right. it gives you outsized power. And yet we've allowed these social media companies to basically dominate the news and dominate what people see. I'm highly concerned. Senator Lee and I sent a letter to the CEO of Google following his testimony in front of the House, where he completely denied that Google does anything political or is biased in any way, shape, or form in terms of how they manipulate search. I don't think anything could be further from the truth. So we sent him a letter asking him to really go through his management and ask some pretty tough questions and giving him the opportunity to revise his testimony. Dr. Epstein, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him, but he's a PhD psychologist from Harvard, a Hillary Clinton supporter, has been writing about how Google manipulated search in 2016 and probably tipped more than a couple million ballots in favor of Hillary Clinton in 2016. And then he's also saying that probably over 70 million votes were influenced by their search manipulation in the 2018 congressional races. They can have an enormous impact. If you're talking about who are you concerned about influencing our elections, I'm far more concerned about social media companies, companies like Google, who do it through these ephemeral experiences. You can't, it's hard to even catch them doing it. You know, one of the things that Dr. Epstein pointed out that Google did, I think it's in 2016 and 2018, is just for Democrat supporters, Democrat voters, they gave them a screenshot saying, hey, make sure you vote. I mean, that has an impact. Oh, geez, I got to go and vote. Didn't do that to conservatives and Republicans. That is the type of manipulation we're talking about that really should be an illegal campaign contribution from my standpoint. But we have not figured out how to control this and how to rein these companies in. Antitrust laws, I don't think, are adequately designed for this new reality.
Right, right. In fact, you put a tweet out late Friday that said this: your company, you address this to Hey Google and tag them in it. Your company wields a considerable amount of power. We need assurances that you will not allow any sort of electioneering or use of politically biased algorithms on your platform. Sincerely, at Senator Ron Johnson, at Senator Mike Lee. So you're putting them on notice, aren't you?
Yes, and I do hope there are plenty of people that are monitoring their performance. I know that's what Dr. Epstein is attempting to do. He's done it in the past. We need to make sure that these social media companies are honest and politically unbiased, which right now they are not.
All right. No, they're not at all. And we're seeing this everywhere. And you point out some pretty strong measures that and concerns that you have that Americans need to be aware of. Finally, the last piece I want to talk to you about is the battle on HCQ, which you have been really at the forefront of in a big way, which is really the antiviral. And it's been very controversial, clearly. Where are we as far as making this readily available to Americans? You're not hearing anything about this. I mean, you're hearing a lot about remdesivir, but not HCQ. What's the latest on this?
Well, this is probably the most frustrating and also complex story here. So I can't get into all the complexity.
Right.
But the bottom line is there are forces in the administration that are opposed to President Trump that poisoned the well for hydroxychloroquine by, first of all, issuing an emergency use authorization that sounds good, but dramatically restricted the doctors' off-label prescription rights for hydroxychloroquine, to the point where there are medical boards, there are governors, there are states where you can't get it prescribed for you. There were studies, they were highlighted in the media, designed to fail. Late in use, where the studies early in use with zinc? They've so poisoned the well that you can't even get people signing up for those types of studies. So the risk-reward ratio for hydroxychloroquine is just obvious. It's been safe since 1955, this drug's been around. And, you can take it safely, particularly early in treatment. There may be a serious circumstance really late in treatment where your heart's already been affected by the coronavirus that maybe it is a problem, but very early, it's as safe as it's ever been. Why not give people access to it, and why haven't we done the rigorous trials to prove one way or the other? Because trials have been blocked.
If this thing could have saved all these lives, it's actually sinful. Why have they not stepped on the gas on this, and why can't we get this? Because there's a lot of politics being played, Senator Johnson, on this, and this story is as you say, it's significant, and as you also said, it's probably the biggest story that has frustrated the hell out of you, right?
So early on, there are obviously people with financial interest in things like remdesivir. So that's a $3,200 or north of $3,000 cure versus hydroxychloroquine and zinc is less than $20.
Exactly.
So initially that might have been the motivation. Right now, Malcolm, I think the more significant motivation is people who have, fought hard to restrict hydroxychloroquine. I mean, if it's ever proven to be effective, they're going to have blood on their hands.
There is proof it's being effective. I mean, there is proof.
A lot of these people mm-hmm. are in a position to make sure that it's never proven effective,
right. Or
the types of studies. So they're going to do everything they can to make sure they're never proven wrong, and that is an enormous impediment to making this more widely available.
Well, listen, I'll say this, Senator Johnson, I wouldn't hesitate to take it. Would you?
No, it's the first thing I would. If I have a fever and a cough, I'm going to do everything I can to get hydroxychloroquine and zinc. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zelenko has a protocol. A number of people have protocols.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. Now, I'm not a doctor. People have to choose. People should have the right and freedom to choose for themselves. I'm the guy that promoted right to try. This is something that should be between a doctor and patient. This shouldn't be restricted politically by a bunch of bureaucratic actors.
Do you think by chance there's a vaccine coming before year end?
Well, what I do know is the administration has done tremendous work.
Yeah.
And, this is actually one of the smart things, the CARES Act, too. Working with the administration, we allocated billions to start producing vaccines right along with the approval so that if something gets approved, now you don't have to wait 6 months for it to be manufactured. We already have a stockpile. Now, are we going to blow billions? Probably. But it's costing our economy trillions. So I thought it was incredibly smart of this administration to embrace that type of manufacturing process in tandem with the development of the vaccines. And we're doing this across the board. There are a number of vaccines that are going through a very rapid approval process. And by the way, credit pharmaceutical companies for having the ability to do this, but at the same time, we're doing the manufacturing of these things so that we can speed the vaccines, if they're proven to be effective, to market as quickly as possible.
That's one of the notable things to come out of this administration, actually, is the fact that they have reduced regulations everywhere. The president does not like red tape, and he continues to get red tape out of the way, which makes a lot of sense, Senator Johnson, when you really want results. I think that probably is one of the principal points that has unsettled a lot of people in Washington who typically don't know how to deal with a lot of that. This president takes the gloves off and says, let's go. I want the result. I want it done. It's kind of a CEO mentality, though, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. It's the single biggest contributor to our successful economy was we stopped adding the regulatory burden and actually reduced it. I referred to President Trump as a candidate as the political equivalent of a disruptive technology. And the swamp doesn't like to be disrupted, which is why they have struck back. They've been striking back hard since the day after the election when, according to them, the wrong person won. And they've been sabotaging his administration. I am amazed at how President Trump has held up to this assault. It's a relentless assault. The lies, it is absolutely amazing to me, Malcolm. I give the guy a lot of credit for having the type of tenacity to hang in there and continue to try and do right by the American people.
Yeah, that is well said, Senator Johnson. And we are living in historical times, as I continue to remind all listeners. And you hear Senator Ron Johnson there, and he says, you know, this is it. And this president is equally up for the challenge, it seems here. A big thank you here to Senator Ron Johnson. As we continue on with Viewpoint, friends, I want to talk about crime escalation. The war on cops continues. Defund and abolish. This is the other big story. Civil unrest. And we'll be back after this brief pause in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. The other big lead-in story, I think everybody would agree, is the continuing, some people would call it the war on cops, but certainly the civil unrest and what is transpiring in America's cities. This is no bigger topic than this one here that you're going to find when you look back historically at this moment of what has taken place. And it still, there seems to be not the motivation from Washington, from Congress to do something about this, because it's being used as a political tool, like a lot of things I would suggest to you people. Jonah is here to talk about the escalation of crime in America's cities, this specifically this war on cops, but get to some truth here a minute. Let's bring on Dr. Ron Martinelli. Dr. Ron is a retired police detective, a forensic criminologist, a political analyst, and a contributor to One American News Network, OANN. He's the host of Talking While Married here on America Out Loud. His book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, can be found in the America Out Loud bookstore. Just go right there, type in Black Lives, comes up right away, and you'll see that. The police executive research forum surveyed four cities, Ron, across the country and found that crime rates in Indianapolis, Milwaukee, New York, and Las Vegas is the four they took, coincidentally, has spiked since the reopening of our country, a fact that law enforcement leaders are concerned with. How concerned are you?
The crime is increasing. It depends on what crime is increasing. I think the issue is violent crime. And across the nation, violent crime is increasing. Please don't believe the mainstream media in some, depending on what network you're listening to, that crime, violent crime, is not increasing. Because as I recently wrote in my article that I think we're going to talk about later, it is exponentially increasing. Violent crime, gun crime, robberies, rapes, things like that, they're all increasing. So other crimes, and the lower level crimes, the larcenies, the thefts, the car break-ins, the car burglaries, the carjackings, the auto thefts, all increasing. But law enforcement plays a game with some of those. So let me give you a great example very quickly. If a person breaks into a vehicle in all 50 states, that's a felony. They break into a locked vehicle, that's a felony. But if they open the door and steal $1,000 worth of things, that's a petty theft. Now, what some of the agencies are doing to play games with the Uniform Crime Report, because they don't want a high felony statistic because it's embarrassing for the city, they will try to reduce that crime when the person calls in. First of all, they don't even investigate those things anymore. So before, when I was a police officer, when I was a detective, somebody got their car broken into, you would go out there, you would dust for prints, you would try to actually solve that crime. Right. They don't even respond to those types of crimes anymore. They don't even respond to burglaries anymore. Those crimes are taken over the phone. And as best they can do it to reduce the crime statistic, they will put that in as a misdemeanor instead of a felony. The next thing, if you see across the board in many of the states, and California is a great state, New York is a great state, they are releasing tens of thousands of violent inmates from jail and from prison because of COVID-19. All right. California Governor Newsom just this past week ordered the release of 17,000 prisoners from state prison. These are all felons, and he just released them out onto the street. So when those people go back out on the street, obviously crime is going to increase. The issue of this new restorative justice, whatever you want to call it, which is just BS, what they've done is created, New York's a wonderful example, zero bail. So people are going out, they're committing felony crimes, assaults, gun violence crimes, rapes, robberies. They're going to jail, and then they're being released immediately on zero bail. The same thing with the protesters. So crime is going up. Now, what exacerbates that in the mindset of the citizenry is, of course, if it bleeds, it leads, right? You know that, right, being in the right. media. If it bleeds, it leads. And so these types of crimes are on the media every single night, which creates a very depressing look if you watch television.
Crime is going to have, I mean, there's only one place for it to go, Ron. I think it's going to probably increase, isn't it, with all these considerations?
Oh, absolutely. And if you take, and not to be political, but to be factual, mm-hmm. I think that's more important, that we be factual. The areas where the restorative justice is taking care, place, the zero bails, the recidivist crimes are predominantly in democratic controlled municipalities and states. And the, and you alluded to it, is the handcuffing of police. So New York City got rid of stop and frisk, then Chicago, then all these other cities got rid of stop and frisk. That's what proactivity is in law enforcement. Legitimate legal stops based on reasonable suspicion and probable cause. The searching of individuals, the arresting of individuals, the incarceration of individuals. That's what reduces crime. And it's been proven time and time and time again that proactivity mitigates and reduces crime. And now that's gone. They've scared the police. And so now the police are scared that every time that they confront a person committing criminal behavior, they're going to be set upon by civilians. They're going to be recorded beyond their body cams and dash cams, and they're going to lose their jobs, or they're going to be prosecuted, and then they're going to be sued. Who wants to do police work in that environment?
Well, that's what's happening. I mean, there. In fact, that's one of the things coming out of this report is there. You know, the proactive policing. It looks to be with all these factors playing into this will probably become a thing of the past. I mean, we're already seeing that in major cities where they're not being proactive. But how could they be when they are not only that, but arresting the cops for doing their job, threatening them with life in prison, doing all kinds of things? That's got to play on the law enforcement community, and as a law enforcement official, I mean, you're hearing all kinds of reports of that, I'm certain, in the policing, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. One of the things that exacerbates the psychological mindset that people are more susceptible to being victimized by violent crime is the news media. Because just turn on the tube. I mean, everything you see is violence. Violence this, violence that. And don't forget, since it's a recent poll, look at all that we have seen recently with all the violent protests, the police being taken on, the burning, the looting, all of this. When people watch that and they are inculcated with that violent television every single night, it affects the psyche of the individual. Whereas when they're talking about, you know, the potential for them losing their job, that is more conceptualized to the individual. Because they get it. They see their friends losing their jobs. They see businesses going under. Their businesses are telling, if they're an employee, their business, their managers are telling them, hey, we're having problems. We're doing this. They see the layoffs. So that tends to be a more accurate mindset than the general, hey, I feel I'm going to be a victim of a violent crime. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I mean, you know, getting the biggest thing here is getting the truth out to the people, to the public, because as you say there, the media is twisting all of this and it's hard to really understand the facts. That's one of the and the other thing, Ron, is that this being an election year, an election cycle, this even makes it more polarizing because it just depends upon one's agenda of how they want to put things out there. And we're seeing those narratives twist and turn here consistently. Now let's get to your op-ed here, which is always well done. It's entitled Inconvenient Truths on Officer versus Civilian Involved Shootings. Now, this gets into some interesting things because right now, in addition to this war on police and the war on crime in America's cities, we have, again, the ugly card of racism that is being consistently played. And that's what's happening right now. Race and the black vote has become a big part of election 2020. No doubt about it. In your piece here, you say for some context and a reality check, looking at the city of Chicago, for instance, which is, again, the Lori Lightfoot is the mayor there, and has been very outspoken and a supporter of the BLM movement, Black Lives Matter. So at the end of July, citizens in Chicago had already shot about 2,400, approximately, people and murdered 400, over 400, that is, in acts of gun violence. But police in Chicago, on the other hand, have only shot or wounded about five and killed three citizens. A whopping 95% of all people of color in Chicago are shot and killed, not by racist police, but by other people of color. So it's that black on black crime we're speaking about here. Speak to that narrative specifically, Ron.
So with those statistics, and by the way, since I wrote that article, there were 11 more homicides and 71 more shootings, Malcolm, in the city of Chicago. So citizens shooting other citizens of color have accounted for 142 times more shootings.
That's incredible.
Civilians on civilians than officers shooting civilians, and citizens shooting other citizens and wounding them in the cities of Chicago, 85% more than officers wounding, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. That says to me, let me ask you this. That says to me, there's a cultural war going on within their own ethnicity there. I mean, it's a cultural war, clearly. Why aren't more great Black American leaders and others speaking up to the point that you're saying here?
Well, for a couple of reasons. Number one, just like we said, you know, the inconvenient truth is that it's people of color versus people of color, not police versus people of color. So that's the huge, you know, Black Lives Matter thesis. You know, that's what I wrote all about in my book, the thesis. But it is a false narrative. The entire thesis is a false narrative because we have in every major municipality, we are color balanced. So the race of the officers in these big cities, I don't care, you know, Chicago, Baltimore, New York, Philly, Detroit, LA, Houston, you know, you name it. They mimic the demographic, the racial demographic of the communities that they police. So it isn't white officers killing people of color. And so that is a horrible, inconvenient truth for the Black Lives Matter movement. And for politicians that support that movement, because they're ignorant. They don't, and you could take, any citizen could take 10 minutes and get vetted research and do the work that I do if they wanted to, but they don't. You know, citizens are disengaged. They listen to TV. Politicians placate their base, and that's why we have this problem. Here's an interesting facet just of Chicago. Citizens using justifiable deadly force have killed and wounded twice as many people of color as police officers in their own city of Chicago. I mean, that's amazing. Justifiable deadly force.
Let's talk about the election now and how this impacts the election, Dr. Ron. And that is that, right. So we're in this election cycle now. again, most people, unless you are a statistic yourself, you're going to turn the other way and you're busy in your life. You get other challenges. You don't really pay attention, as you just suggest. You rely on the media sources to give you whatever you're going to get, which is badly tainted. So how do you, in your opinion, how does this all affect election 2020? What do you think happens with this? How much of an election issue? What is the end result? And break that down right now with the election and law enforcement here.
In the 2016 election, people like you and I were talking about that this is the most vital election. This is the most important election that we've had in the history of the United States. It's even more true for this coming election because the country has been torn asunder. Are you going to go, very simply, are you going to go with a demonstrated work product from someone like President Trump, who is supportive of law enforcement and the mission of law enforcement officers to protect us and to enforce the rule of law? Are you going to follow and go in that direction? Or are you going to vote for Joe Biden, who's got what I believe to be serious medical issues and mental health issues, and waiting for the shoe to drop to find out who his VP candidate is going to be? Joe Biden is not pro-law enforcement. Joe Biden is not pro-Second Amendment. And look at, just as an aside, that relates to law enforcement. We are finding that the police cannot protect the citizens. If you've watched anything in the last few months with all these riots and all this insurrection and this chaos, the police have largely been ineffective. Gun sales recently have hit their all-time high in the history of gun sales in the United States of America. Yeah. Concealed carry permits, people wanting to carry a weapon, which is their Second Amendment right for protection, because they realize the police can't get there in time. The police right. can't protect them, through the roof. We've never seen this many.
Wow.
Now, going back to the vice presidential candidate, look at who Joe Biden is looking at. I personally think it may be Susan Rice because she has international experience. But what has she been? Anti-law enforcement, all the way anti-law enforcement, and completely deceptive, going into Benghazi and everything, anti-military. Then you look at the next two candidates, Kamala Harris, horrible reputation in the law enforcement community in California where she comes from. She has no domestic, meaning domestic national experience, and she has no international experience. And then the third person who touts the fact that her mentor is an avowed Marxist. And a black, and all of these people are Black Lives Matter supporters. Mm-hmm. So just look at what could happen into our immediate future.
You know, the one telltale sign from a lot of this, Dr. Ron, is where you say the rise of a lot of these, the Second Amendment rights that people are exercising to become armed and the permits and everything going through the roof. Well, if you think about it, everybody, in real terms, that to me is the underlying point here, that tells you everything, no matter what the media says or what anybody says. That to me is the proof in the pudding. That would tell you, how do people really feel? Well, that's how they really feel. They feel like they need to be armed and they need to protect themselves. Bottom line is, people, you need to do what's right for you and your family, which is what I say to you all the time anyways, especially when it comes to an election. Be selfish and vote for what's right for you. That's what an election should be. It's a very personal decision. So, Dr. Ron Martinelli, again, I want to tell you about the article called Inconvenient Truths on Officer versus Civilian Involved Shootings. Now, his book, again, it's really, sales are going crazy on this thing because people want to know the truth behind the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police. You can get it right from the America Out Loud bookstore, right off the navigation bar, friends, at AmericaOutLoud.com. Just go in there and either type in Martinelli or Black Lives. It comes up immediately. You can order it right there. It'll put you right in touch with his site to get the book there. Now, all great books are in that bookstore, by the way. We encourage you to check it out and be informed. It's all about information, people. So anyways, we're going to continue on here now with Viewpoint. And So next up here, you see the media, there is a mode of protecting Joe Biden, people believe, that he is being protected from the media, where he's not being accounted. This recent statement he made, which about everybody says was a very racist statement here. We'll talk about that next with Michael Johns and talk about what the media is up to with this overprotective mode here, which we really haven't seen something like this before historically in election. That makes the next few months vitally important that everybody is informed here. Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint continues.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
This has really become, I think, very controversial, the fact that the media is simply not, they're not pushing anything back on that part of the election 2020. It's clearly they're pushing the president back, but not Joe Biden. So listen, let's call it what it is, people. The narrative is here that they are in the tank potentially. I mean, we can debate this, but for it appears to be Joe Biden. An interview that Joe Biden did was aired on at the convention of the National Association of Black Journalists and the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Let's jump into that now with Michael Johns. Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement, a former White House speech writer, and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. And so the statement that got some play, but was quickly dropped, Michael, was this. And I quote, he said, Biden, unlike the African American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes toward different things, is what the vice president exclaimed. This, he went on later on. I mean, this thing got interesting. He made other remarks at the National Association of Latino Elected Officials. He said in that appearance, he vowed that if elected, his administration would reflect the full diversity of this nation, as well as the full diversity of the Latino communities. And again, he never really apologized for this. He quickly walked it back, and he said, they came out on social media, Michael, and said, earlier today, I made some comments about diversity in the African-American and Latino communities. I want to clarify. You always know when a politician wants to clarify, they stepped in something. And Biden wrote, in no way did I mean to suggest the African-American community is a monolith, not by identity, not on issues, not at all. But yet, that is not what he said. Did he?
Yeah. So the statement he comes out, presumably to clarify the earlier statement, is a complete opposite of what he actually said. Right. He said very clearly that the African-American community in this country lacks diversity, which is an unbelievably outrageous statement. It's an untrue statement. And it brushes, certainly, at least brushes up against a racist statement in the sense that you're grouping an entire ethnicity of over 40 million people into one group and assigning, presumably, attributes to them. Now, this is the way many conservatives believe that Democrats have long thought about African-Americans, which is a very disparaging way of looking at it. We have 40 million plus African-Americans in this country that are individuals, and they have individual God-granted attributes and developed attributes, and to look at them monolithically like that is insulting, wrong, and and you know, possibly racist. And so it was an outrageous statement, and his clarification is simply one of basically like denying that he had said what he said.
Yeah, well, you just said it right there. I mean, the statement, while maybe, as you said, is untrue within the Black American community, however, it is a true statement of what Democrats believe. I think that when you look, you know, historically at the way they have their relationship with Black America, Michael, I would say in their minds, and I'm talking about in Democrat leaders' minds and in the Democrat Party minds, it probably is a very true statement, because they've taken advantage, I think a lot of people would argue, of the Black American community. And so the fact that Biden, you know, the one thing about Biden is he says things that are blunders and he just comes out with it before he realizes what he said. You remember the time he said about put them back in chains and things of that nature? I mean, yeah, he's got a whole history of saying outlandish remarks when it comes to Black America, but this is kind of one of the big things that is happening, I think, as the Black American vote has become so vital to the 2020 election. Do you think Americans are onto this at this point? And more important than that, is Black America onto this? Do they get the sense of what's happening here with Biden, you think?
Well, I thought it was a kind of a defining statement, and one that should have gotten a lot more attention if this race were being covered objectively, which, of course, as you and I know, it's not being covered objectively. Yeah. The president on the South Lawn of the White House, properly criticized it. But I would like to see kind of some more reaction and some follow-ups. So, for instance, one of the logical questions, if this race were being covered objectively, would be to Biden, you know, when you talk about the African-American community lacking diversity, what are these common themes mm-hmm. and common attributes that you presumably believe can be so sweepingly assigned to over 40 million individuals? Yeah. What are they exactly? I mean, that question really should be presented.
Yeah.
And almost this whole, first heard it, I said, this should be almost a full stop moment in this campaign until that question is answered.
Here's the thing. It's not going to be a full stop moment because they're not covering any part of this stuff. On every level, they seem to be sheltering, which we'll talk about a lot more in hour two, but about this whole thing with Biden and what's happening. What do you think happens within, how does this information get out to the public? I mean, what's going to happen if the media is not reporting these kinds of stories and they're giving him a pass here? That kind of makes it, that's an uphill battle to get any kind of truth out there to the American people, because I'm telling you, for those people who go to all these media outlets and get their news, and I've watched them a fair amount this past week just to get a sense, it is pretty sad and sick the way they are covering this election already. I think we're in some trouble here.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the pandemic is allowing Biden to kind of escape the typical scrutiny that you would see assigned to a presidential candidate. I mean, if you think back about this, you know, historically, you know, certainly post Labor Day, you start to see candidates making 3, 4, 5 campaign stops every given day with media covering in detail comments that are made and press conferences usually happening with regularity. So they have very controlled access to Biden right now. I think that interview was with Yahoo, perhaps. Wasn't a major network. I don't think it got a whole lot of broad dissemination. It did get some coverage, and he was forced to come back and clarify. But I'm, you know, like, there's clarification, and then there's like pretending you didn't say what you said. And he clearly did say what he said. And what he said is that, you know, kind of this very identity politics that I think the American people, including those that are thrown into these identity groups, have had enough of.
90% of the media, I'm going to say 90%. I say that pretty confidently, but that's a hell of a stat there and a ratio of media that is in the tank for this candidate to, you know, win and take down the current administration. So you've got a couple of things going against it here. You've got, you know, and they are taking advantage of the pandemic, clearly, the politics that are playing out here in election 2020 already. So that combined with the fact that now they have an excuse to cover this all up here, it means that this election 2020 is probably going to be, Michael, like an election we haven't seen before. And I'm talking about the struggle to get information, because, you know, I talked about at the top of the program with Senator Johnson about that, actually, about the social media and the way they're gone after the president, the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Googles and all of that. And he came out and said some interesting things about that. You can't rely on these people. And this is this has got to be the biggest challenge and the problem for the Republican Party, don't you think?
I do. And I think, unfortunately, Biden's being able in this environment to speak in these sort of cliches without a whole lot of follow up or analytics. I mean, just to talk about repealing the president's tax relief, which provided tax relief to, you know, about 80% of middle income Americans, to deal with the ramifications of raising taxes on middle income workers, to restoring the corporate rate back to 35% where it was under Obama and Biden from the 21%, which would make the United States completely uncompetitive again in the global economy, to deal with what is his policy on the border. He opposes the border wall, where a President Biden would be concerned about the presence of illegal aliens in this country, presumably no, because we don't hear anything from him. He would put us back in the Iran agreement, which had Iran developing nuclear weapons, and restore normal trade relationships with one of the greatest threats to this country that exists right now. He would completely surrender to China on trade, presumably do nothing on these human rights areas, watch Hong Kong be steamrolled. I think the ramifications of all of these things are just not receiving the analytics in conventional media that they deserve to have an educated voter base that goes to the polls on November 3 and understands the ramifications of whatever lever they're going to pull.
Right. And that makes our job here, my fellow Americans, so vital and so important. And that is to get the news and the information out there. I mean, this is why it's so key and why you're a big part of this and why we need your help on the mission to get this information out to the American people, please, because it's simply not being covered in 90% of the media equation out there. I mean, just do the math, my friends. That makes our job, you and I out there, so vitally important. Because if we don't do it, we the people I'm speaking about, if we don't do it, who's going to do it? Nobody. And that really is the challenge we're faced with here. Well, the good news is Michael Johns will be with me in just moments here as we take on a whole second hour on Viewpoint Presents, which airs just after Viewpoint this Sunday, every Sunday now, friends. It's two great hours from 10 to 12 and from 6 to 8 Eastern time now. You can get us on any time zone at all, on iHeartRadio or apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or a world-class media player. All shows, you can catch these on podcast networks worldwide on demand. That's right, on Sunday afternoon, just after 2 p.m. anytime. You can get them on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com and on podcast networks. So, got a lot happening in the second hour, debates, predictions, and the polls. Interesting stuff I have for you there. You've got to hear what is being said here about this as we get into this vitally important election here. And then also, you know, President Trump's accomplishments pre-coronavirus were absolutely historical stats and numbers. And we should talk about that and possibly some of the post-coronavirus stats as well, potentially. Also got a very interesting piece we'll bring you on Rand Paul. He's got suggesting a new education strategy. That's a big controversy with COVID-19 right now and opening up our schools. We'll dive into that a bit too in the second hour here with Michael Johns on Viewpoint Presents, my friends. It is time to get involved and get loud.